Welcome to Conversations with Leaders on Tremendous Life Radio, providing some of today's most influential and inspiring leaders a platform to share their stories of growing up, what happened, and what they're doing today. Now, here's your host, Todd Weaver.
Welcome, everybody, to Tremendous Life Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have some kind of a special guest for us tonight. We have Ms. Cookie Tuminello. She's a founder and CEO of Success Source LLC. She's a leadership and team development coach, a motivational speaker, and an accomplished author. Her latest book, Climbing the Ladder of Success Without Stepping on Your Values, is available now. Cookie, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, you're most welcome. It's always a pleasure to chat with you, Todd.
Thank you so much. You know, we met you a while ago. I never met you in person. I'm looking forward to that, but we met you a while ago, and I just really got attached to you right away. You seem so transparent and so wise, and I knew that we really wanted to have a conversation with you on the show, and here you are.
Well, I know. It's so wonderful. I'm excited. We did just kind of connect. And just start chatting.
Yeah, it's good, man. That's where we love having these conversations. So let's get started right away, Cookie. Take us back, if you would. We like to get the backstory on our guests a little bit. Take us back to some early childhood memories, where you're from, and kind of what was going on with you on the inside.
Well, you know, I was born in the South, born and reared in the South, in South Louisiana. And I was also raised in about a mile from the gates of Louisiana State University, and in a part of what we called a section of town called Little Italy, you know, because I'm Italian. Everybody that lived around us seemed to be Italian, and so that's where I was raised. My dad's business was, he owned a service station business, and we'd ride our bikes there. And I went to Catholic school, of course. You know, all us good little Catholic girls went to Catholic school. And, you know, everything was centered around family, friends, mostly, you know, family traditions and things like that. And a lot of that shaped you. You know, I think that part of that was being a Catholic Italian and going to Catholic school, there are a lot of rules and regulations, so to speak. And we were raised to speak when spoken to, and everything was yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am. And a lot of that, I always say, a lot of what shaped us, you don't think about this when you're growing up, but once you do grow up, you realize that a lot of the beliefs that you have were shaped from your childhood, from family beliefs or whatever. For example, if, like, my mother liked to go to Mass at 6 o'clock in the morning, 6 a.m., so she would root us out of bed at 6 a.m. in the morning. Well, my dad liked to go at 10, which was much better for me because I like to get up later. So I like to go at 10 o'clock. But, you know, a lot of our beliefs were shaped by the way we were raised, what you saw, what you heard, what you were taught, a lot about, in those days, a lot about, you know, how important security was in a job in those days, so they thought. And, you know, you were raised to think that, okay, you only do this one time and you stay in one place for 35, 40 years and, you know, you have a pension and you this and all of that. And women, of course, were taught to be the nurturers and the servants of the family. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, those are some of the beliefs that came along with it. And the other was that my father passed away when I was just 15. And that really, really changed my life because I was so close to my dad when he died. And that took a good while to get. I don't think you ever get over it, Todd, but you learn to remember more of the good things than you do the not so good things, like them passing away, that type of thing.
Well, hey, Cookie, so, thank you, Sir Phil. I want to ask you that. You know, growing up in those early years and looking back, and it's funny you say you didn't really know it at the time. So I get that from everybody, including myself. It's always cool to have the opportunity and really the grace to be able to look back and look at things. But things that shaped you early, like, did you were you strong on the inside? Did you have a lot of self-value early on? Did you know what you wanted to be? Were you a go-getter? Were you disciplined? Those kind of things. What, did you have brothers and sisters?
Very disciplined. I was raised in a very... I used to say I was raised in a sterile environment. We, you know, my mom was one of these, you clean... you vacuum and mop every day. Buff the hardwood floors once a week, that type of thing. So, yeah, we're pretty regimented. And it was, and I guess you could say, yes, I was strong-willed, but yet there were a lot of boundaries, and I can remember thinking that, you know, in those days, I pushed the edge of the envelope.
Yeah, well, that's what, there's always a double... Yeah, there's always that double-edged sword on being strong-willed. I believe a lot of us go, you know, we got to find our boundaries first off, and a lot of times
well,
we cross over.
Well, you have to find out who you are first.
Sure.
And
sure.
I don't think that, and a lot of mine growing up was really structured on. My mother was very strong-willed, matriarch of the family, and a lot of where I was going and what I was doing was based on, you don't think about it at the time, but it was based on what she thought you ought to be doing. Like, you're going to go to college, you're going to finish college, you're going to be a teacher, you're going to be this, or you're going to be that. Well, when you get there and you do that, I finally realized that was not what I wanted to be.
Right, right. When you hit on that,
of course,
that's... I'm sorry, go ahead, Cookie.
No, but that, you know, creates havoc. And that is when, I guess you could say, I started breaking away from the norm. And after about a year and a half of college, I decided, no, I think I want to go to work.
Well, talk about that. I mean, what can you even identify or explain what was going on internally? You said it was raising havoc. You know, it was an inside thing, probably, I would guess. There was some disturbance. You started to realize, I mean, did you read a book, or did you hear someone say something to you that really brought your attention to the fact that you may not be doing what you really wanted to do, or explain? How did that
no,
come about?
No, it was just, it was instinct, I guess you could say. I just knew. My mother wanted me to go to college to become a teacher or a secretary, and I went, no, that's not going to work. Mama, I'm not going to college 4 years to become a teacher or a secretary. I don't want to do that. And the havoc wreaked when I began to say, no, I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That was
right.
When the havoc broke out,
you know,
because I was supposed to go to college. But in essence, what I realized is that was not living my dream. It was living my mother's.
Uh-huh.
Because a lot of what my parents, being second-generation Italian-Americans, didn't get to finish high school or college. They had to go to work. My dad, so hot tamales at, you know, 12 years old. And my mom, and they got to maybe 6 or 8 grade, and they were working in my grandfather's grocery store. And that's
take us through that. And, you know, we could do a whole show. We've done lots of shows with people that, you know, we talk about that imprinting early on and living, you know, mm-hmm. kind of like our parents and people that loved us, you know, kind of living, what's the word, vicariously through us.
Other people's adventures.
Right. All kind of good stuff are based on kind of some good internal stuff. But to see that you weren't living your own life, that's huge. And stepping out, you really took some risk, I guess, or actually faced, you know, some, I don't know if ridicule would be the word, but, you know, to be courageous enough to say
no. You could say
wrath
would probably would be a good word.
Yeah, well, you know, it's hard, man. I mean, I laugh when you say that, but it's hard. That stuff's hard. Finding ourselves is always hard, I think, anyway.
Well,
and from,
it really is. And you don't, you know, what's really even harder is going against the grain of what is. And
right.
you're not going against just yours. You're going against the grain of what has been the belief for years and years.
Right.
And so when you take that on, that is, I think the hardest thing that it was not as hard for me, but it was for my mother, was that I didn't graduate from college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was her dream for me to do that. But it was her dream,
right?
Not mine.
Right. Right. Well,
and the interesting thing to realize is that I wound up many years later, once I became a coach, teaching a course at Louisiana State University.
I love it. I was going to say that earlier on, but I didn't want to blow it. So many to guess, you know, we do come full circle. It is amazing how things kind of work out so far.
Yeah.
So when you, you know, because it never ceases to amaze me. I mean, you're such a established, esteemed, you know, leadership coach, motivational person. So in this, bear with me because I'm a northerner, I guess, and that's all I know. So I don't want to sound, mm-hmm. You know, almost what racist or sexist, but growing up in the South, as a woman, probably presented, I would guess this, Elaine, help me with this, some other challenges as far as you being pretty strong-willed and following your own heart's desire. Talk about that a little bit.
Oh, yeah, it did. Because I married an Italian. And, you know, the Italian boys, you know, their mamas doted on them, they took care of them, and we were taught at a young age you're supposed to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it was supposed to be. And I can remember my mom about 2 months before I got married. She says, she'd wake me up every morning and says, when are you going to learn how to cook? And I went, well, I am. Just give me time. She said, it's 2 months to the wedding. So one morning I just woke up and I got my notepad and pencil and went, okay, start your talking. And that's how I learned to cook, Ty. But in her mind, I mm-hmm. had to start early and I had to be doing all of that now. Or, you know, the famous word for my mom and in the family was, what would the people think?
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Everything was about how it looked and, you know, what would the people think and all of this. And the majority of them, they were real close to, but I was one that was, yeah, you're right, I am gregarious. I had a lot of friends. I was always going and doing something, which to my mother's, she could not relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my daddy could because I was more like him. But in those days, you just kind of stayed in your little, your little comfort zone or your little section, and that's how it was. And
well,
the other thing too is, you think that when you're growing up, you'll think, "Wow, you know, that our parents are worldly or they're this and you know, but then you realize when you get older and you start sorting through, I think for me, sorting through all of that and determining what was really my beliefs and who I was versus what was their beliefs. And you wake up and you realize that their circle was very small. When you start thinking about stepping out of that and into something bigger, they tend to stay in a lot of what they knew as opposed to venturing out to something they did not know.
Well, and take us through that. It certainly does. Let's take us through that. So you left school, you followed in your own heart, at the chagrin maybe of your mother or what you thought so, or your family,
mm-hmm.
and you went to work. What did you do?
I went to work at the clerk of court's office, and I worked in the marriage license division in the clerk's office. And, you know, just, you know, assistant. Is what I did. I looked up real estate records, conveyance records for people. I did, you know, marriage license for the people coming in there. I filed papers. I did all of that. And that's how I got started. But I can remember the coolest job I ever had was when I was 12 or 13 years old, and this really was, to this day, I remember it. I thought it was just the greatest thing since grits. But my dad was president of the Louisiana Service Station Association, and they were lobbying in the legislature over gas prices and that type of thing. And I got to be a page for the lieutenant governor of the state of Louisiana at that time was Taddy Aycock. And basically what that was, you were just a glorified gopher. But you got to be around all of that where all the laws were being made. I mean, if they told me to go carry chairs up to the 15th floor, honey, of the Capitol, I did it. And it didn't bother me at all. But just to be around that was amazing to me. And I enjoyed every minute of it. That was the best. That was the coolest job in the world at 12 years old.
Yeah. Thank you. And I love hearing you talk about it. I can hear it in your voice. Now, at 12 years old, when you had that job, that must have imprinted you even to this day, you bringing that right up like that. What did you realize how cool that was at the time? Did you realize really some of the things he was teaching you?
You know, I really didn't. I just thought I was just, you know, it was so interesting. And I'd see my dad would be up there all, every day because it was, you know, voting on something or trying to lobby for something. And, you know, my dad was just my dad. He ran the service station, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he was standing there talking to the sergeant in arms. And, I mean, I was raised, my mom and dad entertained a lot. And we had the governors and lieutenant governors at our house for dinner. And I would, you know, I just lived in middle-class America. I was like, I just, you know, I knew them and would, you know, chit-chat. Well, I say chit-chat. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. And on occasion, I got to fix and mix drinks for everybody. So, you know, I was around some colorful people, I guess you could say, and it was phenomenal. You know, I look back on it now and I think about it. At the time, you don't think about how I say cool, for lack of a better word, but yet inspired that I had the opportunity to be a part of that, you know. But until you get older and you don't realize that, wow, I just thought I was just, you know, Wow, the governor came over there. But in those days, I mean, my dad was involved in, you know, political campaigns. And the day that my father passed away, the first person that came to our house was Governor Davis.
That's huge, man.
And it was just huge. I remember that. I mean, and I think about, my gosh, it's interesting because you don't realize the hugeness of it until you're older and you realize it, you know?
Yeah, that's...
So, but it really impacted me because one thing we did that was, my father was very well, you know, very well known, but he was just my dad, you know? And he was very well respected. And that shaped a lot of my life, too.
Yeah. Well, and listen to the story so far, Cookie, and thank you for everything. You were surrounded by leadership and powers of example, your mother, your father, those people. And, again, you mentioned it a few times that you didn't really realize at the time. So it's cool listening to how your story's kind of unfolding so far. What did you do after – how did you get into – you know, deciding that, you know, I think there's some, were you writing things down at the time? Did you like to write? And how did you decide to get into leadership?
I was I was always in leadership. That's
right?
The interesting thing about it. I was president of a sorority at 18 years old. And it was a women's sorority called Beta Sigma Phi, and I was voted president at 18. So leadership started for me at a very young age, and I just always was one that would either go help out or, you know, would go and do whatever, and would just step into leadership. And I think that's probably why the entrepreneurship, I just worked well as an entrepreneur and started out that way. When my first husband and I were married, we had a real estate business and home building. And I would oversee the design and the decorating of the houses and work with the clients. And then I started a wedding consulting business and was a wedding consultant. And it just kind of went on from there.
Hey, I find it funny.
I don't know. It just was.
You became a wedding consultant, and you worked in the courthouse in the marriage license division, huh? It's funny how things come full circle.
Yeah, isn't it, though? And, I mean, I can say that I had a great childhood. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say that we don't, you know, have things that we didn't get punished for, or we didn't do what we were supposed to do, or whatever. I mean, like I said, every now and then I pushed the edge of the envelope, but I also realized how far to push when it came to my dad or my mom.
Yeah, right. But what was going on inside of you? When did you start having a real desire to, I mean, did you know, did you define it? You know, we talk about dream boards, visualization, law of attraction, all those things. Were you listening? Did you have a mentor? Were you listening to speakers? Were you reading books? Or take us through that.
I read a lot, but it was not until I would guess that I started reading a lot when I became, it was after my husband passed away, my second husband passed away, which was, I think that I told you before, that had impact on my life. We were married 14 months, and he passed away. And it was 2 weeks before my 36th birthday. And I can honestly say that that was, he was a beautiful man inside and out. And, you know, after being a single mom and raising two kids and then finally finding love again, and all of a sudden to, you know, to lose that at such a young age, I also felt like I was living in my mom's, following in her footsteps, because my dad died when I was 15, at 50, and my mom was a young widow. And that really had an impact, because a lot of what, in, I guess, for my moms and their culture and the way that they did things, once you became a widow, you didn't step outside. You didn't go do anything. You didn't do everything. It was just, you stopped living. And it took me a lot of years to realize that that was not how I wanted to live my life anymore. And, you know, I did start a lot of reading. After my second husband passed away, I became an image consultant with Beauty Control Cosmetic. And I became a director and a trainer for the company, too, at the time. But it was after 10 years of that, working with that company, I knew, I just started feeling something was missing. I couldn't put my finger on it. I didn't know what it was, but there was something missing. And it was, you know, I woke up one day and I realized that I had been living somebody else's life instead of my own. And I started taking a look at, you know, whose beliefs was I looking at. I realized that I had choices, and I just, and as a result of that, a friend of mine knew that I was struggling in and out. I was having some problems, and with that, and just, you know, going inside and thinking, like, something's not right. It's not working, whatever, I don't know, but this is not working. And I attended a class, a weekend course that a friend of mine suggested that I attend. And I remember that was my first introduction to coaching. And I remember the coach walking up to me, and he talked about, I want everybody to sit down and stop and check in. Well, I was so oblivious and unconscious, I thought he meant, had I checked into the hotel?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, just totally no consciousness around what was going, you know, going on with me, other than it was not right, wasn't working, whatever it was. And that was when I started taking a look at that I had been on autopilot. And it was time to start taking a look at what was working, what wasn't working, where I'd given away all my power, how I, you know, took care of everybody else but me, and how I realized, I woke up and realized that I had choices, and that I was a people pleaser and taking care of everybody else like a good little doobie. Even though, you know, I say I was strong-willed, I was still a people pleaser. Mm-hmm. That's the way women were taught to be. We were taught to be nurturers and servers. You just sucked it up and you kept going until one day you can't suck it up anymore and you can't stuff it down anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you have to make some changes. And that weekend changed my life. And mm-hmm. as a result of that weekend, I became, that was when I decided to become a coach.
Hey, thank you so much for sharing that, Cookie. That, you know, it is wild and it's scary, at least for myself. And listening to you, it's not even realizing we're on autopilot those years. But you just, and then that's that changing weekend. Apparently, you were ready to hear it at the moment, you know, and there you were. And that changes. That it's a drag getting to that point, I know, for myself, you know, getting to the place where I can hear somebody else tell me something.
Well,
but,
you're right. To clear out your head enough to where you can hear what somebody says. And he looked at me, and I realized that I had been, I think, for that 7 years, it was 7 years after my husband had passed away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just felt like a part of me had died. Mm-hmm. And his words to me, and this man did not even know me, but it just goes to show you how you don't have to, somebody doesn't have to tell you. You can look at them. You can watch your body. You can, you know, just stand there. And he said, it's time for you to take your hand out of that casket
mm-hmm.
and start living.
Tough words. You know, you mentioned people-pleasing, and it that term carries with it, at least for me and people I know, a lot of negative kind of connotations. A friend of ours, Amy Wells, said, I want to be a people-pleaser. I think the term and what you're describing is that, you know, we're so strung out on what other people think of us, you know, that need for approval and all those other things, what we're supposed to do, the imprinting from early on, all those are deep seat. Those things run deep in me. But you finally saw that, you know what? I'm important too, I guess. That's what it sounded like you described to
me.
You learned stuff about it.
Right. You have to find, you realize that you have value. You don't realize how the threads of that weave through every facet of your life, from not being able to make choices for yourself, allowing other people to tell you what you should and should not do and how it ought to look, and, you know, looking good and being a good little doobie. And until you wake up, and it also shows up in when you do start a business for yourself, and you become an entrepreneur like myself or yourself, and it even impacts what you charge people because you question your own value and what you bring to the table. And are we enough? And, you know, a not enough conversation. It is ingrained in the fabric of our lives. And you have to start taking a look, and it has a lot to do with how we talk to ourselves, mm-hmm. what we say to ourselves, and you know, what we're willing to do and how committed we are to doing it.
Right. And for me, Cookie, what you're describing, you know, there had to be a desire to be different. For me, in my story, the path was it got very bad. My life got mm-hmm. very bad, and I was very uncomfortable for decades, and that almost made me willing to allow myself to be helped. You talked about that weekend. From that weekend forward, I mean, did you know that weekend that was going to set your whole path on a different course? Did you scream from the mountaintops? Did you go home and write things down? Did you get a coach?
Well, I'm going to tell you what, my first mentor was my trainer in one of the next weekend that I did. And he became my coach, and he was truly, he and well, she's my dear friend now, became my two mentors. And just to show you, I was working, I wound up working for that company, that training company, until I finally realized that that was not, I was doing that and that was great, but it was time for me to get out from under that and start my own business. And when I truly decided it was time for me to start my own business was when, and I will never forget it, Oprah started her Remembering the Spirit, Your Spirit, phase of her show, and having different empowerment trainers and things like that. And that is when I decided that I was going to start my own business. I remember it vividly.
Yeah, it sounds so cool just to hear you describe it. I love it. And thank you. That, you know, you talk about second guessing and self sabotage. Those things, you learned them. Those aren't theories that you share with people. Those are your own facts, correct?
Those are my experiences. I mean, that is what actually happened. And you know what I tell my clients is, and one of the quotes that I'm really, that just really speaks to me about that. Really, there's a couple of them, but there's one by Joseph Campbell that says, "We must be willing to give up what is in order to have what's waiting for us." And if you're going to do it, you have to just go out, let go, and do it. But I think what happens is because we've been raised, I was raised in an environment where you have to go for security. They have benefits or they have this or whatever. That's not so much so anymore in the workplace like it was for us, my age group coming up, baby boomers. But to step out of that and to quit a job in those days and to go get another one, you had to stand up to a whole lot of, are you crazy? What were you thinking?
Yeah.
You know, in 35 years you could, you know, have a pension and this and that. But yep, that was not the way that I wanted to go. And the interesting thing about it, Todd, is that I wound up being a teacher after all of that.
I love it. Well, I don't know, and I guess some of the work that you do is secretarial too, even though that sounds so almost demeaning, that term nowadays, you have to be called. But so your mother's dream for you kind of, you know, came to fruition, right?
Well, yeah, well, she wanted me to be a teacher or a secretary, and she wanted me to go to college 4 years to do that, and I went, that's not going to happen. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, now, did I incur a lot of wrath? Yes, I did, but hey, I mean, Mom, that's not my dream. Now, do I think that I would ever go back and finish college? No, I don't, because I think that, I mean, that's not, it's still to this day, while I think that it is very valuable and I think that it is rewarding, if I went back to college today, it would just be for the voracity of learning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a voracious reader. I'm a constant learner. I'm always wanting to learn new things and, you know, to try different things. And I think for us, you don't ever get to a place, what I call the I have arrived place.
Mm-hmm.
You just, it's like peeling the layers back, and every time you do, you get to a place where you finally have mastered that, or should I say it doesn't hold, have a hold on you, then it's time to move on to the next challenge, whatever that is.
Yeah, I like to call it staying hungry, and I've been blessed. I've been hungry for quite a while, and I think that's okay. I like not arriving really at all. So,
well, I do too, because I mean, like, it's not about that; it's about the journey, and it's about us becoming. Karen Salmonson had a quote that says, when you become calm on the inside, the world becomes calm on the outside.
Hoorah. Yep.
Because it's a lot of how we view everything. And the more you become and the more peaceful you become about who you are and what you bring to the table and your own value, then the easier it is, I think, for us to step out of that comfort zone and, you know, keep growing and keep learning.
Hey, Cookie, let's talk about the book. And thank you so far. I want to talk about, first off, the listeners can find out everything about you at cookietuminello.com, correct?
Correct.
And the book, and this really got my attention, you know, through Tracy Jones and Tremendous Life Books Publishing is how we got connected. And I know they probably republished the book, but I love the title, Climbing the Ladder of Success Without Stepping on Your Values. And I believe that second part, well, is at least as important as the first part. That's what got my attention. Take us through that. Where did the book come from? What kind of
influence you write? Well, the book came from out of the fact that my clients had been asking me to, you know, you need to write a book, you need to do, you know, you need to put all this in a book so we can, you know, learn from it. And, you know, so we don't have to remember it all the time, Cookie. So finally, after a few years, I finally wrote the book. But the intention behind it was because a lot of the books that you read or courses that you take, they talk about the what, but they don't ever tell you the how. And a lot of what we do is tied to our confidence. And if we're not confident about doing something, you know, it's real easy for somebody to say, oh, just go do this. Oh, yeah, okay. Well, we just go do that. Well, how do we go do that? But if you tell someone, everybody's got that confidence muscle. They just haven't used it. And nobody has said, you can do this. This is how you do it. You do step, 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 step. And they go, oh, yeah, I can do that. And that's how I learned. And for me, and it made, if somebody told me how to do something, I'd just go do it after that. And if you made a mistake, well, heck, you know, you screw up and it's not going to be the first time and it certainly is not going to be the last. So it's just part of learning and it's all how you view it. So that's when I wrote the book. But the part about the values is what I was talking about is we were growing up adopting others' beliefs and others' values. Until you wake up one day and you start asking, well, is that really my core value or is that theirs? Is that really my beliefs or is it theirs? And when you start dissecting it, what you have to do is then you realize that all along the way you have given away pieces of yourself. And now it's time to go back and collect all those pieces that you left behind, which are your core values, your self-esteem, your confidence, all of that, your potential, your possibilities, your value, all of that, you have to go back and pick up those pieces. And I used to say it's kind of like a Mr. Potato Head. Then you start putting it back together again. But you start putting it back together again with the pieces of you that are you and what you believe, not what somebody else says you should believe.
And it seems to me like the things you're talking about really is a path to freedom, and I guess its highest sense. That, and a book like yours, Climbing a Ladder of Success Without Stepping on Your Values and Having Mentors and Coaches, just helps us, like you said, just gives us a roadmap. I mean, I guess it's our culture. Maybe it's just me, but I think it's our whole culture is most of us like to start at the finish line. And, you know, I found out that that's not the way it works. So
no,
what you described there, putting it back together again is huge. And you find, I guess you do, because the clients that come to you must have a desire. But we do have to have a desire. First, we have to realize that something isn't right, like you described before that weekend. And then have a desire and enough, I don't know, courage, I guess, or some internal fortitude.
Yeah, to ask
something
for support.
Right. And
because
then to go do
what,
it.
Yeah, because here's what happened. You know, you look around and you see people that are working in positions, in jobs that they've worked all their lives at. But if you ask them, were they really happy, they tell you no.
Right.
So that's part of where your values come in. And I work with clients, too, a lot about being able to, when you look at what the mission statement or the core values of a company is, what the first question I'm going to ask is, how is it showing up? And if it's not showing up, then there's a disconnect between integrity and values and intentions. And if you are working for a company or you're working or doing something that is not consistent with what your core values are, that's going to cause a problem. That's going to cause you know, to maybe not get where you want to go, not fulfill your potential. A lot of people are in positions and jobs where they just suck it up and just do it, whether they believe in it or not. It's just because so-and-so said go do it, and they just go do it. But if you aren't consistent with what your core values, aren't consistent with what you're doing, then there it's going to create a disconnect, and it's going to cause a lot of stress in your life.
Yeah, and you know what you're talking about, Cookie, thank you, is that it happened to me personally, and, you know, for a long time, it just seemed to be worth it almost until the disturbance or the havoc, as you described it, became greater and greater. You know, this is good enough, but, you know, I've come to learn that good enough is the enemy of the best. So, you know, there's Jim Carrey did a commencement speech for a college, and it was so moving or inspirational for me. And just quickly, he said something about his father taught him a really, really valuable lesson early in his life. His father was a public, like an accountant or something like that. And for 15 or 18 years for a company, figured he'd retire there and have a pension, like things you talked about. And he didn't really like what he was doing, but it was good enough. But Jim watched when he was young. His father lost that job, and they became very poor for a long time and struggled a lot. And the lesson Jim took away from that is you can do something that you don't really like and lose that. You might as well go do something that you love and risk losing that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I put the
exactly.
words in that correctly, but
exactly.
that was powerful to me. But
it
takes some courage.
It was. Because here's the thing. You know, I have a lot of clients come to me and they go, but it's security. I went, really? You think that's job security? They could walk in tomorrow and say you're fired. Mm-hmm. The only job security that you have is you. You create your security.
Right.
And when you give your power away over somebody else to determine what your security is, that's mediocrity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's settling.
What did
Jim Carrey also did something that, and I remember, I don't remember his speech, but I remember this. When he left, and evidently that was a repercussion of what happened with his dad, when he decided he wanted to become an actor and he was struggling, he wrote out a check for $1 million and he put that check in his wallet. And he said, one day I'm going to cash this.
Mm-hmm.
And he went through some, like we all do, some pretty tough times. And he kept that check in his wallet until one day he had enough money to cash that check. And that check was far surpassing what the pen and the pension and, you know,
that
was his lesson from his dad.
Mm-hmm.
That he created his security.
Yeah, and it is, it, for myself, and from listening, reading books like your own, and listening to a lot of guests in the show, wise people around me, allowing people to be around me that are successful and step out on the edge. And, you know, they say so many things like, if you're comfortable all the time, you're probably not living as full as you could be. Jim Rohn,
right?
I was in the midst of my kind of internal disturbance not so long ago. And, you know, Jim Rohn has so many quotes, but I probably read this many times prior, but this time it punched me in the gut. It says, you better make a plan for your life, because if you don't, you'll be part of someone else's plan. And what they have planned for you isn't much. And I thought, oh, no, I'm that guy. How did this happen? I am that guy. So, you know, I have a lot of mentors and accountability partners and people in my life that help me. So I guess until I'm prepared to hear the message, I just can't really hear it. It sounds like you described that throughout your whole story as well.
Well, and I've been blessed with great mentors, too. And like you, I read a lot. And I also listen to tapes all the time. But I think it's got a lot to do, too, with how we talk to ourselves and how we ask for what we want, and knowing that it's okay to ask for what you want, because a lot of people don't think they have permission to do that. And my motto has always been, it's a lot easier to ask for forgiveness than it is permission.
I love it. And you know, you talk about that. The guests lately have really been talking about that self-talk. You know, we had Shad Helmstetter on the show a while ago. He wrote the book, What to Say When You Talk to Yourself, you know. And it really, really opens up, turns a lot of light on. Hey, Cookie, thank you so much so far. We're kind of running out of time. I wanted to talk about, what do you have coming up? Do you have any kind of wild secrets you want to reveal? Do you have some big project you could like tell
us
about?
Well, I've got a couple of things coming up. One really I'm really excited about is a book signing with Barnes & Noble coming up at the end of this month, which I'm really excited about. And I'm also getting ready to do a new, shall I say, unleash, a new communication training and for people in sales and marketing that I'm getting ready to unleash in April.
Well, where can people find out about that?
Well, this is going to be with a private group, like a multi-level marketing group. But what I'm going to be doing, they can go to Facebook at Cookie Tuminella, and I'm going to be posting where I'm going to be at certain dates, and I may be coming up to up north.
Yeah.
And to do some things with Tracy. So I'm looking forward to that, too. So that's what I've got on the so far. And I think there's going to be more than one book signing. I think I've got two or three. But I'm really excited about that, because I guess you could say that has the Barnes & Noble thing has been something on my bucket list.
There you go.
So to speak. So I can cross that off.
Yeah, well, this has been such a joy. You're really easy to listen to. And I did really connect with you when I had listened to you when you and Tracy had your conversation. You sound like a no-nonsense kind of, you know, without being, you know, brash or arrogant. You're cool. You know, you're believable. I believe you're very genuine, authentic. And it's just neat that you came on the show and, you know, shared your story.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you asking me.
Oh, man, we had a blast.
I enjoyed it. It makes both of us easy. I think we're both kind of easy to chat with, and we just kind of, you know, just kind of chat about what is and what's so for us.
Yeah, that's right. Life's too short, and, you know, I mean, I'm just not, I don't need to convince anybody how cool I am anymore. You know what I mean? It's easier just to be me. So you get warts and all with me, and I don't know if you have any warts, but it sounds like you're pretty transparent, too. So
well, I am. I got lots of warts, you know, and I got lots of stuff, and it just is. And, you know, it's kind of like when somebody says, well, what if I make a mistake? I just say I screwed up and move on.
There you go.
I mean, no sense to get all crazy about it because you're going to do it again, and it's going to happen, you know.
Cookie, it's been a joy. It really has been. I really appreciate the time. I hope you got something out of telling your story as well. You know, you've been real valuable to us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for bringing me back to it because, you know, we sometimes, you know, we go off and we just kind of forget about it. And I want to thank you for bringing me back and remembering, you know, just what brought me to where I am now.
No, it's been our pleasure, Cookie. It really has been.
Well, I thank you, Dalton, and I look forward to meeting you in person when
Absolutely.
I come up north.
Well, make sure you let me know, and we'll be there, okay, Cookie? Thanks so much.
I will.
All right.
Thanks a bunch. You have a
have
great
a great
evening.
Night. You too.
You
Bye-bye.
Too.
Bye. There you have it, Miss Cookie Tuminello. You can find out all about her at cookietuminello.com. That's cookietuminello.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We really appreciate all the listeners, certainly all the guests. Get on over to the website, tremendousliferadio.com. You can listen to all the shows over there, see the upcoming guests, contact us there, write a review. Get on over to iTunes. Just search Tremendous Life Radio. You can take us with you anywhere you go. We're all over the place now. Thanks so much for tuning in. Until next time, make it a great day.